I'm joined today by Abby Johnston, Deputy Editor at The 19th, a new nonprofit newsroom with a mission of centering gender in the conversation between politics and policy in the United States today. The 19th strives to be a reliable, nonpartisan news outlet for all women, especially those who have been historically excluded in mainstream media's narrative. Abby, thank you so much for joining me today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So what is The 19th News and how did it get started? What makes it unique from other platforms?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think you got the high level there in the introduction, but we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan newsroom that is centering gender, politics, and policy and really probing the intersections of that. We launched last month, so we've only been around as a full-fledged operation for a month. Although, you know, some of us have been working on this and we've been putting out stories since around February. So, you know, this was mostly like our big debut to the world, just happened on August 3rd. So, but it came about, so our CEO and co-founder, Emily Ramshaw, after the 2016 election, was at home. She was on maternity leave with her baby girl. And she started thinking about a lot of the things that we saw in the 2016 election and a lot of the things that women were feeling, particularly after that election. And she started thinking, you know, wouldn't it be revolutionary to have a newsroom that focused on gender politics and policy? Because most of the political coverage that we see tends to center white cisgender men, right? So she started thinking, you know, wouldn't that be this amazing thing? Surely after this cycle, we're going to see someone do that. And, you know, she sort of had the thought and then kept waiting and waiting and waiting for someone to actually act on it. And no one did. So I think it was just one of those things that kept coming back to her. She kept thinking about it, couldn't stop thinking about it. And so fast forward to 2020, 4 years later, and here we are out in the world. And I think, you know, the reason it needs to exist was certainly highlighted a lot by the 2020 election, or sorry, the 2016 election. You know, if you look back at the coverage, there was a lot of sexism that was happening in the way that Hillary Clinton was covered. That certainly is not unique to her. I think that women politicians have dealt with that since they got into elected office. But also, you know, I need you to pull up this stat because I don't know exactly what it is, but I can tell you that most people who are leading newsrooms, who are the people assigning stories, who are the people who basically decide what type of coverage you're consuming, it is overwhelmingly white cisgender men. And that has a huge impact on the types of stories that we see, the framing of stories that we see, whose voices are elevated. And so the 19th exists as an antidote to all of that. And so we're just really grateful to be able to do that work.
The 19th purposely leaves an asterisk in its title, a nod to those who did not gain voting rights under the amendment, which recently celebrated its 100th year anniversary. Why is the 19th's intention with this asterisk so meaningful, and why is it important to acknowledge that the fight for suffrage hasn't been the same for all women?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the asterisk is, like you said, demonstrative of the fact that, you know, at the beginning, when in, you know, we just celebrated the centennial of the 19th Amendment, which, you know, on its face, the way that we typically talk about it is gave women the right to vote. But actually, you know, Black women who were out on the front lines fighting for suffrage alongside white women didn't actually get the right to vote until almost five decades after the 19th Amendment. You know, basically any time that a trans voter still today goes to the polls, they run a risk of being turned away. You know, so there are still people who are disenfranchised in this country. And our asterisk seeks to, you know, spotlight that there is still work to be done, and that we're going to tell the stories of people who are still being left out of our democracy.
So the 19th has obviously been very busy during the pandemic. What are some of your favorite stories that the outlet has reported on during this time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've been covering so much. You know, you brought up the pandemic, and one thing that we've been doing since the beginning of it, we partnered with the Philadelphia Inquirer to do this, and our editor at large, Erin Haynes, has been really helming this. But we did a series called Portraits of a Pandemic, and so it focused on women in Philadelphia who were just kind of dealing with the fallout. And you know, some of these people were just, you know, regular business owners or moms who were kind of trying to adjust to their new reality. And then, you know, we talked to people like I believe she is the first Black police chief ever in Philadelphia. But, you know, just sort of touching all of these different points of life and our new realities. And, you know, our pandemic coverage, one of the other things I think was birthed out of the coronavirus is it has laid bare a child care crisis in America. You know, I think it's estimated that up to 50% of child care centers will not reopen. And so that has been a huge coverage area for this, because that does disproportionately impact women. You know, this is estimated to wipe out decades of progress that women have made in being in the workplace. And so this is a big deal. And so we're paying attention to the solutions that Congress is proposing. We're paying attention to what the campaigns are saying right now. And we're writing about the people that this impacts already.
So you mentioned the economic impact of COVID on women. The 19th has been reporting on America's first female recession, which refers to the first time that women's trend of upward participation in the workforce has been declining since the 1970s. What more can you tell us about this female recession, and why women seem to be getting hit the hardest economically during the pandemic?
Yeah, no, I mean, and the childcare aspect is like one sliver of that, but you're absolutely right. And this is the first recession where, you know, the last recession that we had, you saw a lot of men losing jobs. But this recession in particular has hit women extremely hard, because a lot of the jobs that were deemed non-essential are jobs that women hold, right? So, you know, a lot of retail, a lot of restaurant jobs. I would also like to note that a lot of LGBTQ community works in those same sectors. And so you saw a ton of job losses there. And so I think that, you know, it's still unclear exactly how big this is going to be, but childcare again, like, folds into that, because even when they can go back to work, you know, it's going to become more expensive. Likely the childcare that they might've had before, they might not be able to access now. And so we're starting to see the tip of it, but it's just going to, I think we have a lot more coming. And in fact, we just published a piece this week about public sector jobs, which are often sort of seen as a pathway to, you know, steady middle class life, particularly for women, and how those are about to take a really big hit. And again, that has impacted women disproportionately.
Moving on to the 2020 election season, we're seeing a lot of issues surrounding misinformation and disinformation on social media. Could you explain what this means and if the 19th is taking any steps to combat this issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still figuring out exactly what our role is in that. I mean, I think any journalist will tell you that our role is to report fairly and accurately. And I think, you know, a lot of the misinformation that we see now is largely happening because people do not consume news in the way that they used to. Partly, I think, you know, the industry has to take some blame there, right? Trust in media is at an all-time low, I believe. And then the current presidential administration has, really stoked that, has stoked, it was something that had been happening before Trump got into office, but, fake news became a catchphrase largely because of President Trump. And so I think that, a lot of where you see a spread of disinformation is through social media, and that's where a lot of people turn to for their news. So on Facebook, I know it's particularly rampant. And often it's just stuff that sounds like it could be right, but isn't reported with context. I think sometimes misinformation is just a missing context. I think sometimes it is actively planted to be wrong. There's like two different kind of types of it in the way I look at it. And so, yeah, when you don't have fact-checked media, but you have it in this package that makes it go viral across Facebook, people don't know to stop and question that. And so I think, the 19th role is just to make sure that we're getting out in front of people and, staying open and saying, hey, we're here to consume. You can consume us for free. That's another reason why we always want our journalism to be free. And in fact, we allow people to republish our journalism for free. So anyone can go to our site at any time and, properly crediting us can republish our journalism. And the reason that we want to do that is because we know that our stuff is vetted, we know that it's accurate, and so we want to make it as accessible as possible for the electorate.
You mentioned that a lot of people are getting their information from social media right now. Do you have any advice for people who are experiencing media and/or news burnout and why it's so crucial to stay informed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still figuring out how to manage media burnout myself. It's understandable, and it's a lot, especially with the pandemic, and this reckoning with systemic racism in the United States right now. It's a lot to consume, and it's often dark, it's often heavy. But I think, the way that you can be an active participant in democracy, is by voting. And so what we want to do is be able to empower people to make informed decisions that are going to be the best decisions for them. And so I think, if you're facing media burnout, I try to frame it as it's part of a civic duty, right? To stay informed and understand what's happening in your country. What you do with that information is your business. But I think it's important to really know the facts and maybe challenge your assumptions. And so, but I will also say, I understand. I totally understand. And it is okay to walk away from it. I kind of set hours. Most of my day is spent reading, and editing and consuming news. And so I passed about 8 p.m., barring some giant breaking story, I do not read anymore. I read fiction after 8 p.m.
So one thing that stood out to me in the 19th's mission statement is that it's vowed to remain nonpartisan in its reporting while staying away from both sidesism. Can you explain what that concept is and how traditional media outlets have fallen into this trap?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I think anyone who went to a journalism school has been taught at some point. The intent is good, right? You want to get both sides of the story. You don't want somebody saying, this is true, this is fact, but then somebody else on the other side not giving them a time to answer that. So there are things that, you need to parse out by getting all sides of the story. But I think for us, not playing both sides is a, well, let me back up. Basically, what it turned into, though, is that every little thing had to have both sides of an issue presented, right? I'm not going to call anybody out, but there was a lot of coverage, around some of the earlier rallies that we saw, like in Charlottesville and stuff, like where, we at the 19th, we can call a spade, and so I'll say, like, it was racism happening, right? at this rally, but a lot of the media coverage was, playing both sides of it and saying, okay, well, we talked to the protesters and this is what they think, and then we talked to the counter protesters who were out there, trying to shut the rally down to get their side of the story. And at that point, what is the utility there? And I think it doesn't mean that we'll never talk to the other side. I still think that there's a lot of value in understanding viewpoints that you might not necessarily understand, but it means that we don't have to give it equal weight, that we don't have to present it without context. And so I think that what we really mean by not engaging in both sides isms, it's hard to say, is not giving everything equal weight and providing the proper context when we do present it.
Sort of along the lines of giving things proper weight, with the recent shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, followed by a 17-year-old's killing of two protesters several days later, there's been a lot of controversy about how the media has portrayed this teenager. Many outlets have been accused of trying to humanize the 17-year-old and provide explanations for his intentions. How is this an example of how powerful framing can be in the media, and why wording headlines carefully is so critical?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really excellent question, but I think, even by asking it, you sort of got to the heart of it, right? Is that the way that you frame headlines does matter, because often, and I will say this as someone who's been in like digital spaces for a long time, people don't stop to read the story all the time. It's my hope that you always would, but I also understand that that's not always possible. And so, the way that you frame headlines often is what sticks with people, right? They just saw the headline and they keep moving. And so that's something that I think about all the time, and being truthful and being as accurate as you can be to get people to not, put something out there that's salacious just for the sake of getting a click, I guess. And the other part of your question, I mean, again, that is a moment where there was a little bit of both sidesism happening, right? In a different way, but I sort of look at it as related. And I think that, I think that we have to stop and ask ourselves why we needed to put so much attention on the killer. And in fact, sort of recent school of thought is to not put focus on the perpetrator of a crime and rather look at the victims. And so it is curious that that kind of went out the window in this instance. But, I think a lot of it also is like fueled by the rhetoric that is happening. There's a lot of politicians who sort of were trying to cast the shooter in a specific light. And so it's I think that that definitely has something to do with it, but it is a moment for the media to kind of step back and ask why these questions that we thought we had answered, is particularly with, the spate of school shootings that has happened over the past, several decades in the United States, why we sort of lapsed on that.
For journalists, where is the line between being an activist and being a reporter? Or, in other words, how can you cover issues that advance civil rights, racial justice, and gender equity while still remaining impartial or professional?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. I think that, even from the time that I was in journalism school, I think that the way that we are looking at that is different, right? And a lot of that, we talk about objectivity a lot, right? That was something that was taught to me as sort of a core tenet of journalism. But now, a lot of people, the idea is that objectivity doesn't exist, or the objectivity that did exist in journalism was only filtered through white dudes, right? And what they would perceive as objectivity. And so I think that, I don't think that you should ever go into a story with assumptions. That is like the big thing. If you go into a story and you think you know how it's going to end, and it ends the way that you think it's going to end, I bet you didn't ask enough questions, right? And so to me, I don't look at myself as an activist. I look at myself as a truth teller and a storyteller. And I tell stories that will, and this goes back to like the beginning of journalism, right? That will afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. Ugh, I barely get that out. But you know, that's something that we've said for so long that is like a basis for this industry. And so I don't think that certainly there are different schools of thought on this, but you know, as a nonpartisan outlet at the 19th, you know, for us, our main objective is to tell the truth and report it and give the proper context around it. And that's the end of it.
Thank you to Abby Johnston, deputy editor with the 19th. To find out more about the 19th and their work, visit 19thnews.org. With KCSB News, I'm Ashley Rush.